But this is our fourth one on intercession. Intercession is when we pray, when we talk to God for someone else. Last time we were talking about the illustration of the needy friend at midnight, and Catherine pointed out the other one dealing with this is the unjust judge. We'll look at that tonight. Luke 18:1-8, it says this, "And he spake a parable unto them to this end, that men ought always to pray and not to faint." You just stop there for a moment and think, what is fainting? Fainting is, you give up. You faint away. You stop the process. So he's saying here, ought always to pray. It doesn't mean that's the only words that ever come out of your mouth. It's the only thing you ever do. What he means is that you continue praying, and you don't call it off. You don't stop. So that's the purpose, and we hear that right from the beginning. So we now can see the meaning as we go into it. Saying, "There was in a city a judge which feared not God, neither regarded man. And there was a widow in that city. And she came unto him, saying, Avenge me of mine adversary. And he would not, for a while. But afterward he said within himself, Though I fear not God, nor regard man, yet because this widow troubleth me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she weary me." It was all about him, wasn't it? But it worked even for this man. "Lest she weary me. And the Lord said, Hear what the unjust judge saith, and shall not God, by contrast, avenge his own elect, his own chosen ones, which cry day and night unto him, though he bear long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth?" He's addressing those who want to kind of snap their fingers and God snaps to and salutes, you know? Hey, I ask, why don't I have it? And he says, he may bear long with giving your request. So let's ask ourselves here. This shows God's children crying day and night, yet God bearing long to answer. There's the situation. He says that in reality, even the bearing long to us is speedily. This is where he's doing everything that he can to get this done in the right time. He asks if he shall find faith when he returns. If your faith is based on this, answer me now, answer me quickly, answer me with whatever I want, that's not really the faith that God is trying to build within us. It is in such times we have the greatest difficulty in prayer, where we've prayed and maybe prayed and prayed and we didn't get an answer. He tells us we must expect difficulties that are conquered only by determined persistence. Determined persistence. We see that prayer will not always be easy. What is the problem? In the parables, the one being asked is troubled, the needy friend at midnight, the unjust judge. For this reason, the asker must be importunate and keep on asking. That's what the English word importunate means. In reality, since it is God that is asked, he has no trouble in answering our request. This is no difficulty for him. All the trouble really resides in us, the asker. I said that instead of the prayer, because that's the word prayer. Kind of a tough word. Somehow, we have the incapacity to receive the blessing. It seems like we're ready. But God, who knows it all, says we lack the capacity. God, in all his wisdom, our embedded sinfulness is our difficulty. I said embedded sinfulness because this isn't some sin you did. This is us not having been transformed. This is us living in the fleshliness that was ours when we first got saved. We haven't changed, we haven't grown, we haven't been transformed into the image of Christ. That embeddedness that we are to root out is part of the deal when we are called to importunate praying. This becomes God's difficulty in giving us the blessing. God, in all his wisdom, his righteousness, and his love, will not give us what would do us harm. I think we can settle on that, right? Our sin or sinful attitudes make it impossible for God to answer our requests immediately. Well, if that's true, and I believe it is, how do we solve the problem? That's what we want to look at tonight. How do we solve the problem? Well, to break through the barrier of our sin, God makes our answers depend on faithful determination in prayer. He gives us this task, this test. All right? We are to wrestle in prayer with God, not to overcome his resistance, but to overcome our wrong attitudes. You see that difference? We're not trying to overcome him. We're trying to overcome us. Throughout the ages, men have prayed with the sense that there were difficulties in heaven to overcome. As they pleaded with God for the removal of the unknown obstacles, they entered a state of utter brokenness and helplessness. They became conscious of their utter dependence on him. They became entirely resigned to him. They united with his will. Then the hindrance, actually within themselves, disappeared. The problem in heaven was the problem of sin in the asker's heart. By removing the one, they removed the other. So let me ask, do you have a misconception of prayer? Do you have a misconception of prayer? Are you expecting something from prayer that you shouldn't expect? Perhaps you are remiss in prayer because his call to continued and persistent prayer seems unreasonable and arbitrary. You must see that the secret to answered prayer is often the need to change us into obedient and faithful people who are willing to continue in prayer. We have to become the people who are willing to continue in prayer. The very difficulty of the call to importunity is our greatest privilege. So let's learn the good use of difficulties. What's the good use of difficulties? Difficulties in life call forth our powers as nothing else can. This is the whole message of James, first chapter. Welcome the tribulations, welcome the trials. For this is God putting stumbling blocks in front of you to build you up. See? An old saying is, necessity is the mother of invention. Well, that pictures the idea that need calls forth the best that we have. We become creative. We become inventive. After the prosperity and the frivolity of the Roaring Twenties, the need of the Great Depression and the seriousness of World War II built strength of character and ennobling of spirit in our country. You can see that historically. The silliness of the Roaring Twenties dances and all that stuff. Frivolity of the dress. People got very serious after the Depression. The high living stakes were gone. And then the war began. So it is that Christian discipleship is a discipline of mind, body, and spirit. Difficulty and delay require persevering prayer to obtain the true blessing of heaven. While we are concerned for the needs of others, intercessory prayer, God is dealing with the needs he sees in us as an intercessor. He is forging us into the effective prayer warrior that we wish we were. When we wrestle with God, he is not weakened, but we are strengthened. We come to realize our own weaknesses and our unworthiness. Who are we to ask? We yield to his Spirit to speak through us in our infirmity. Romans 8:26. Likewise, the Spirit also helpeth our infirmities, our weaknesses, being infirm, not firm. For we know not what we should pray for as we ought, but the Spirit itself maketh intercession for us with groanings which cannot be uttered. The language we can't speak. In short, our will, strength, goodness, self-importance, and all our flesh are crucified. We're giving up everything, as it were, to continue to bring this to God. Now, I mentioned the prayer at Gethsemane. Look to Jesus. In Gethsemane, he prayed repeatedly. Matthew 26:44. And he left them and went away again and prayed the third time, saying the same words. He repeated it. And was even strengthened by an angel so as to pray more earnestly. You catch that? They gave him strength to pray even more earnestly. Luke 22:43-44. There appeared an angel unto him from heaven, strengthening him, and being in an agony, he prayed more earnestly. And his sweat were, as it were, great drops of blood falling down to the ground. There's like a stress, a pressure inside, pushing the blood out. That was when he was heard. See? He was giving his utmost. The stories of people who have been in such pressure and trauma that blood seeped through the skin, most of those cases the people died. This is why the angel had to physically help him, because that's where he was going. He was going to the utmost of his ability in prayer. That's when he was heard. Hebrews 5:7, listen, who in the days of his flesh, when he had offered up prayers and supplications, notice, with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death, and was heard in that he feared. This is him pouring himself utterly into the prayer. His victory in prayer was seen in losing self-will to God's will. The famous phrase, not my will, but thine be done. So, consistent prayer is a kind of crucifixion, dying to self. It's a yielding of our flesh to death. The very difficulty of continual prayer is our highest privilege and the source of our richest blessing. Let's try to break this down a little bit. What are the elements of importunity in intercession? Well, three: persistence, determination, and intensity. It works this way: the strong desire for the urgent need of our friend, intercessory prayer, drives us to refuse to accept unanswered prayer. So we pray again. This refusal makes us persistent. So we begin with persistence. Keep on keeping on. Persistence grows into a determination to continue, so we have determination, to give whatever time and effort are needed until the answer comes. The prayer then increases in intensity. You see how that develops? In the presentation to God, it becomes a supplication, a begging, with great pleading. This is like Jesus praying with strong crying and tears. While importunity, the Greek word, does mean a kind of impudence and rashness, it does not mean a disregard of God's sovereignty, of His importance, of His authority. Importunity does not try to boss God. That's just foolishness. I've always been offended, not too deeply, but offended by the people that say prayer is the hand that turns the hand of omnipotence. Well, then who's omnipotent? That must be me, if I control omnipotence, you see. This is foolishness. Prayer is asking, not controlling. Importunity does not try to boss God. See the example of Abraham pleading for Lot and his family in Sodom. Listen to him. Genesis 18:32. And he said, "Oh, let not the Lord be angry." You see that servant's heart, that attitude of submissiveness? "And I will speak yet, but this once, peradventure 10 shall be found there." And he said, "I will not destroy it for 10's sake." He had asked, changed it. "What about this? What about this? What about this? Please, don't be angry. Let me ask one more thing." What was the result of this persistence that turned into determination, that turned into intensity? Genesis 19:29. "It came to pass when God destroyed the cities of the plain that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot dwelt." It wasn't even 10, but the less than 10 were saved out of it. I want you to see the example of Jacob wrestling with God. People have taken this of controlling God by you just not giving up. Your determination, you're wrestling with God. See, but I want you to look at this correctly. We're looking at Genesis 32:24-32. "And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled a man with him," this is God in the form of man, "until the breaking of the day. And when he saw that he prevailed not against him, he touched the hollow of his thigh, and the hollow of Jacob's thigh was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, 'Let me go, for the day breaketh.' And he said, 'I will not let thee go, except thou bless me.' And he said unto him, 'What is thy name?' He said, 'Jacob.' He said, 'Thy name shall be called no more Jacob, but Israel.'" Not supplanter, but prince of God, prince with God. "For as a prince thou hast power with God and with men, and hast prevailed." Are we really thinking that he out-wrestled God? What was this prevailing? It was that he kept on in this until he was blessed. Jacob asked him and said, "Tell me, I pray thee, thy name." He said, "Wherefore is it that thou dost ask after my name?" And he blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, "For I have seen God face to face." The answer that wasn't an answer was an answer. Why do you ask? You already know. And my life is preserved. As he passed over Penuel, the sun rose upon him, and he halted upon his thigh, where the leg had been taken out of joint. The thing we take from this is that he wrestled in this prayer time for the blessing of God, realizing that his life was without meaning without it, that he was facing Esau and the vengeance of a deception and all this stuff. So he gave everything to this prayer. Therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew which shrank, which is upon the hollow of the thigh, unto this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh in the sinew that shrank. So I want you to see his impudence. I will not let thee go except thou bless me. Yet in this we see no pride that imagines he can force God to his will. In fact, see that the answer to his request for blessing comes in the change in Jacob himself. Jacob was one who did the wrong thing and then ran away. He's not running anymore, halting upon his injured leg. When Jesus taught us to believe that what we ask we will receive, he was vindicating Jacob's words. Listen to Jesus, Mark 11:24. Therefore I say unto thee, what things soever ye desire when ye pray, believe that ye receive them, and ye shall have them. This is Jacob. Never giving up, wrestling all through the night. Let's look at Moses. Why did God bless Moses when he prayed with such impudence? Listen to these words, Exodus 32:31-32. Moses returned unto the Lord and said, Oh, this people have sinned a great sin and have made them gods of gold. Yet now, if thou wilt forgive their sin, fine, see. And if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written. You take the people, take me. In response to this, God promised to send an angel. Exodus 32:34. Therefore now go, lead the people unto the place which I have spoken unto thee. Behold, mine angel shall go before thee. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit, I will visit their sin upon them. And we find that this was not enough for Moses. He asked for God himself. And God's answer in Exodus 33:14, he said, My presence shall go with thee. I will give thee rest. Down to verse 17. The Lord said unto Moses, I will do this thing also that thou hast spoken, for thou hast found grace in my sight. I know thee by name. Personal friend. I need you, not just your representative. Let me take you to Elijah. James reminds us that he was a man of like passion as us, praying for rain after 3.5 years of drought. We go back to 1 Kings 18:41-43. Elijah said unto Ahab, Get thee up, eat and drink, for there is a sound of abundance of rain. The King James margin says that sound of abundance of rain is actually the sound of a noise of rain. It's a noisy rain. So Ahab went up to eat and to drink, and Elijah went up to the top of Carmel, and he cast himself down upon the earth and put his face between his knees and said to his servant, Go up now, look toward the sea. And he went up and looked and said, There is nothing. And he said, Go again 7 times. He's continuing to pray in that rather uncomfortable position. And he says, I'm keep on praying till it comes. Finally, the servant says, Well, I do see a cloud about the size of a man's hand. And he says, okay, let's go. Let's go fast. It's coming. So let me close with this. What are we to do? We. Enter into the difficulty of persistent prayer with the very qualities taught in the parables. Not just keep on asking, but why? The true sense of human need, the true Christ-like love that asks for help, the conscientiousness of personal impotence. I can't do it. I would like to do what I can, but I can't do what they need. Complete faith in God to answer. He can do it. And the assurance that we will receive God's best. And once we change, are changed, we begin to see why what he chose was best. Jesus ever lives to make intercession for us. That's what he's doing now. The Holy Spirit ever lives to assist us in prayer, living within our heart, listening to what we really mean inside. The Father ever lives to give what we ask, to reveal what we seek, and to open the door when we knock. So the question is this: what stands in the way of our lack of character? Jump into that crucible of testing, to be ground into nothing but dependence on God, fleshly dependence gone, and to be refined in the fire of waiting for God's answer. It's kind of an exciting concept. Are you willing to go through what God is asking you to go through in this importunate prayer? So he called this the tongue twister, important importunity. Important importunity. This is God working in us. The old phrase is prayer changes things, and it truly does. But perhaps one of the most important things it changes is you, the one praying.